Allowing some patience while we allowed some folks to join us. So for the purpose of the audio recording, that Katie, I understand you're ready and ready to go. Okay. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of the Wasatch Front Economic Development District. And today's date is Monday, November 19th. It is 1:30. And what else? We go ahead and acknowledge those that are on the line with us. If you wouldn't mind stating your name clearly for the record, please.
Davis.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Bruce. Yeah, thanks. Anyone else? Welcome to whoever's just joined us. Would you please mind stating your name for the audio record?
This is Scott Parkinson.
Excellent. Thanks, Scott. All right, and why don't we go with Stuart and work our way around the room. Good afternoon.
Stuart Tyson. I'm a summer corn in Salt Lake County.
Oh, dang it. You don't look like UConn Cornelius.
Yeah. I talk like this, you know.
Sorry about that.
I'm Sally Jones. Abby.
Thank you.
Jeff Edwards with the Utah Advanced Materials and Manufacturing Initiative. Back to back with EDC Utah.
I'm Chris Williams. I'm with Davis School District.
Susie Becker with Science Public Finance.
Jim Smith, Davis County.
Ty Bailey, Morgan City.
Tina Cannon, Morgan County.
Scott Hess with the WFEDD Director and Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Sean Milne, Tooele County Commission.
Andrew Gruber with WFRC.
Joe Spence, Summit Powder Mountain.
Carrie Main, Workforce Services.
Debbie Wynn, Tooele City.
Katie Gerard, Wasatch Front Staff.
Ted Knowlton with WFRC.
Randy Sand, Tooele City.
Bob Danboy, Roy City.
Excellent.
Michelle Custer, Tooele County.
Lisa Davenport, Wasatch Front Regional Council Staff.
Lisa Lambert with the Tooele City Department of Economic Development.
The ladies that are on the perimeter, please feel free to join us. We have extra seats. We'd like to take notes or anything else that makes it more convenient. Please feel free. Not all at once, though. You don't have to, but we just want you to know you are welcome. With that, our first major agenda item is the review and adoption of minutes. Evelyn, welcome. Please, you can join us. And for the record's sake, let it be known that Evelyn Atherton has joined us with Sandy City. So if
Mr.
you would.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
To approve the minutes from last quarter's meeting.
There's a motion to approve the meeting minutes from May 21st and July 30th, or separately?
Did we have two?
We do.
Why didn't we approve the minutes from May and July?
It was a special session.
Oh, that's correct. Okay. Yes, I'm going to approve both meetings.
Excellent.
Okay.
There's a motion, and I think Bruce seconded it, or Scott? Excellent. Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes as noted, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstain? Excellent. They'll be noted as unanimous. Moving right along, this is the time in our agenda when we open it up for public comment. Is there anyone from the public that is on the line with us? Hearing none, we'll assume that there aren't, but you're free to speak up if there is. Is there anyone who would like to make a comment at this time? Anyone here in the room? If not, we will close the public comment period. All right, then the next item is over to you, Scott, for a review of the SEDS update.
Okay, so we're gonna roll the review of the SEDS update and the establishing of 2019 annual goals together. The review of the update, if you remember, July 30th, we got together, we looked at a draft product that was prepared by a consultant for our SEDS development, determined internally that we wanted to go a different direction with that. We pulled back a little bit, have been retooling, and received an extension from EDA to adopt the SEDS May 2019 along with our regional transportation plan. So this is a really good opportunity for us to align very closely our economic development efforts with our long-range transportation plan and vision. Since that time, we've internally created a schedule and scope, and we've actually gone out to bid for data collection for the SEDS. So one of the key pieces of that is all of the demographic data, housing data, economic data from each of our five counties and how they are unique and how that rolls into creating strategies for the future. So we wanted that data to be on a really steady footing, received two bids and have ultimately decided to award the bid to Zions Public Finance. Benj Becker has accepted our acceptance of that. I discussed that with him down at Utah Association of Counties conference in St. George. So they will be moving ahead with data collection that will be completed in mid-January. And then starting mid-January, there will be a little bit of overlap. But in January, you'll be receiving information from us, whether that's a survey or pointed questions or direct emails. But about the data that we have received and then developing the strategies moving forward and how those differ from the six strategies that we had in the prior set. So that's our general update on where we're at with the SEDS development. Does anyone have any questions, concerns, input?
We are. I would just like to commend staff on recognizing that the previous consultant was not moving in the right direction. Recognizing that and stopping it and changing course. So thank you for doing that and listening to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're really excited about the direction that we're going. And actually, EDA, our regional director, Angela Martinez, was very excited about having a region whose regional transportation plan and the SEDS alignment could come together so closely. So the decision for the extension, they were really supportive of that and looking forward to it. So I think this gives us a chance to make sure that that's not just a partial tie-in, that they're really integrated together, and we'll work to do that over the next 7 months.
Riding right along from what Abby said, though, too, while I commend staff for recommending that we pause with the last contractor and do this right, I have to give credit to many that are here in the room and some that are not. Oh, by the way, Katie, I forgot to mention, Chris Sloan asks to be excused today. He had something come up rather last minute this weekend that prevents him from being here today. Anyway, the commentary and feedback from, again, those many that are in the room, some that are not, all too often we can feel as though nobody wants to be that person to criticize, and there are many that came forward to say, you know, I just don't think they're fully grasping what it is we're trying to do with the SEDS. I appreciate all of you that did contribute to giving the feedback to make sure that we didn't just continue for the sake of continuing. And then again, staff, Andrew, you and your staff did an excellent job in addressing that and trying to give them the benefit of the doubt and then coaching them along until ultimately we needed to go a different direction. So thank you. If there's no further comments.
Well, I guess I'll. It's kind of funny to get commendation for just not continuing to do the wrong thing. That's funny, in a way. And I'll just say that for all of us at WFRC, we know that every one of you that is here, is really busy, and you're taking time out of your day to be here, and B, you're here for a reason. You have a lot to contribute and a lot of knowledge, and we don't want to waste anybody's time. And so if we're going to ask you all to participate with us and coordinate across the region on economic development with transportation and all the things you're doing, we want to make sure that it's worthwhile. So pulling back when you need to pull back and reevaluating it was, we just knew that it needed to be done. We heard it from you and we saw it ourselves. So truthfully, the work that was happening at that point wasn't up to the standard that we at WFRC hold ourselves to. So, new consultant and a fresh look to make sure that we point in the right direction with all of you, and that brings us to today's meeting. Right?
Absolutely.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. If there's nothing further, then we'll move to the next item, which I may have a little bit of bias in favor of.
We still got a couple of goals. We still got the goals to go through.
Oh, I thought we were going to do that in the end. Oh, my bad.
You're just
okay. I stand corrected. We have a review, and this is where we would hope to spend the majority of today's meeting, concentrating on what to do as we move forward, speaking of the set. So, Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is definitely a roundtable discussion. This isn't us presenting to you, but just a little bit about the way that I work and how I want to operate with the WFEDD is if I have a clear direction, if you have a clear deliverable, an item that you can focus on, then meetings like this can be more meaningful. We can develop agendas that move items forward, that begin to drive the needle, you know, move the needle in economic development. And so what I've thought about as I've considered the EDD, its newness, relative newness across the state, I wanted to have goals that were further reaching than just the comprehensive economic development strategy. So that's, the SEDS itself is a document. It's one thing that's produced. It exists so that we have a regional plan for economic development, but it's also so that local communities can look at how their projects affect regional economic development and get EDA funding. So that's one, you know, stream, one piece of the WFEDD. But this development of annual goals, these would be items that we could continue to work on, come back annually, and decide what are the most important pieces moving forward. And I was struck as I was down at the Utah Association of Counties meeting this last week, being invited to an economic development group that's developed from all of the counties, one that they didn't know that we had an EDD, and that not all of even our county folks were fully engaged in that UAC committee, that the EDD directors aren't necessarily talking to one another. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for coordination at an EDD level that's beyond just what we're focused on for the set. So these annual goals would be updated, and really want to have a conversation about with all of you in how you see yourself in this group, and then what we can do together to both promote the EDD and move items forward. So first, we would have complete and adopt the 2018 through 2023 Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. And I'm realizing that we're going to have adoption of this in May, so we really need to have the report component of this. So this is 6 months of the goal, and then the remaining 6 months would be reporting back to EDA on progress of the SEDS itself. So that being one, you know, one goal, and hopefully,
and Scott, everybody yeah. has you all have these right?
They're at Katie? The end of yeah, they're
in
the
your end of the in pack. Your place at the table,
right? So any discussion or consideration on that goal, that we want to complete our EDA requirements, continue to exist and be funded as an EDD, and stay relevant regionally. I think that's a pretty good goal, personally.
This is the interactive part, folks. Are there any thoughts about that process or suggestion from staff? Andrew, do you have anything that you're coaxing out of us?
Well, how about I'll make a suggestion to you, and Scott, why don't you run through all of them at a high level, and then let's come back and ask the question, are these the right goals? Do you understand what they are? Are they the right goals? And do they fit with what you're doing in your local areas or within your jurisdictions?
Okay. Absolutely. Okay. All right. So number one, complete, adopt, and report on the SEDS. Number two, promote Wasatch Choice 2050 as an economic development strategy. So we internally have been developing the Wasatch Choice 2050 long-range transportation plan and vision over the last 3.5 years. We're in year three of a four-year process. This is the vision that's going to be adopted in 2019. And this is, it's more than a long-range transportation plan. It's more than a land use plan. It's really the linking, the interlink of transportation and land uses that are correct for those transportation choices to develop and create economic opportunities. And we have engaged local economic development staff in this, and there's been some efforts. I think some see it and some don't, and so there's a good opportunity for promotion here, but just want to run through what Wasatch Choice 2050 is at a high level. So first, 3 years ago, with all of our local elected officials, and developed this across our region, developed 10 goals. These are the 10 goals that the SEDS will be aligned with. You'll notice these are broader than transportation, broader than land use, broader than economy, and it won't necessarily be perfectly one for one. It isn't in any of our transportation modes or land uses, but these 10 goals at a high level are what us as the region are working on to improve community, economy, have affordable housing and places to live, open space, environmental considerations. And then there's really four key strategies. So the first three provide transportation choices, support housing options, and preserve open space. And I would say that's really what our prior plan did. Our Wasatch Choice 2040 vision and the 2015 to 2040 RTP. But we have a fourth piece, which is our concerted effort as a region to link land use, transportation, and economic development decisions. So really bring these together, and this is how Wasatch Choice 2050 differs from the previous long-range plans that we've done.
Can I interject something right there?
Yep.
As many of us know in the room, SB 136 was pretty comprehensive in trying to bring together multiple silos that previous to that point, you know, economic development was and transportation were somewhat separate endeavors with land together with land use, bringing those three elements together, recognizing that they're too interdependent to just be treated in a silo any longer. And I want to give staff of WFRC a lot of credit because they deserve it. I saw them work firsthand very hard to work with that task force to try to affect and influence where it ultimately ended up. But notwithstanding their huge leverage work with that task force, the Salt Lake Chamber also deserves credit, and Abby obviously is one of the leaders over there, deserves a lot of credit as well. And I appreciate, as I know I've spoken regionally with the mayors of Twill City and Grantsville, our need to address these three things for the last few years collectively and together. And so it was really nice to see that done on a statewide perspective, because any of us that, you know, are familiar with how they do things, there's so many type A personalities, so many different voices in such a short time that they're, you know, constitutionally mandated to work together, that it could seem a little unwieldy to try to get all of this together. And that's why they had that task force that worked as long as they did before they brought it to the Hill last year. So Andrew, again, to you and your staff, not to sound like too much kumbaya, but kudos to you guys. But also to
Abby. Thank you. Keep them coming.
Yeah.
Keep them coming.
Abby and her group too, because this is what's going to help our SEDs look better than perhaps some of the others that outside of our state still are treating them as silos.
Yeah.
Thanks, Abby.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I make two quick points on this?
Sure.
One is that the Wasatch Choice vision that Scott showed, and a lot of us already know this, came from a three-year process of checking in and getting input and direction from local government on both the transportation and the land use pieces. So it is the sort of the culmination of a broader three-year process that is externally driven, that we facilitated and convened. That's one. And then two, bringing those together, sort of as noted in that bottom line there, we worked to try to understand the economic impact of that alignment in a variety of ways, but one of the specific ways was understanding how easy is it for economic interaction to happen? How many workers can get to a firm on average? How many jobs can a household get to within a reasonable commute? All of these questions that are about the alignment of housing, jobs with speedy infrastructure, and how the coordination of those things help people get their work done. So we've looked at it purposefully from this economic development perspective, and I think that that's part of the story to tell with the vision of how those pieces come together, is that, look, this is not, it has so many benefits, it has those hits those 10 goals, but one of them squarely is economic development.
Well, and to ride kind of the coattails of what Scott has said about UAC, or Utah Association of Counties, annual conference last week down in St. George, Abby was asked, as well as several others, to give a presentation during a couple of those days of professional development. And I know that housing is obviously part of land use, but she did a really great job of showing, even to Ted's point, I mean, there was just so much robust discussion across those couple of days on, let me back up. There's a sense among some counties in the urban area that public lands don't matter much to them. And there's a sense by a lot of rural counties that urban issues don't matter much to them. And my goal is I've been tasked to work with county commissions and councils throughout the state within UAC leadership this next year, is to try to get both camps to realize how they are not in their own silos, that people along the Wasatch Front go to those rural counties and enjoy public lands to recreate. So the urban counties need to recognize the importance of public lands and how it affects their rural counterparts. And conversely, to our point here, how rural counties need to pay attention to this coordinated element that many of them think doesn't apply to them right now, because they think, those are just I-15 corridor metro area problems. And that's a short kind of perspective. And just like Tooele County, Box Elder, and Juab and Summit right now are recognizing that this suburban sprawl is affecting our counties right now. These other counties are going to feel the same thing as those maybe from our counties that are enjoying a rural perspective right now will get up and leave as they feel like the urban encroachment. They'll go to some of these other rural counties, and they will begin the first wave of that suburban sprawl to those counties. And so whatever we invent today, whether we reinvent the wheel or whether we look at adapting to tiny homes or higher density, trading it off for open space preserved through conservation easements, these other counties should be paying attention to that, because it's on their front step, right? They're going to see this sooner than later. And Abby again, and Andrew and Lanise and Scott were down there to contribute this. So there's so much that's interwoven to this, and I just really appreciate your presentation the other day, because it got some people thinking. And where a third of that audience were newly elected county commissioners in the room, there's a whole lot of people that all of this is brand spanking new to. And I think based upon some of the sidebar conversations afterwards, there's a lot of people that feel like they're already drinking from a fire hose and they're not getting sworn in. So it's good to give them that perspective early on. Yes, Mayor.
Let me ask just kind of a fundamental question, and I think it may be a subset of economic development, but has the discussion included in terms of workforce development? And let me be very specific. There's no question that Weber County, and I suspect Davis County as a whole, we see aerospace industry being a real opportunity in the northern part of the state. And I think to make that work effectively, our tech colleges, and specifically our universities, need to be able to field the manpower requirements to be able to feed that industry. The fact of the matter is, we don't have that today, not to the level that needs to be. And so when we start talking about really expanding the economic development across this region, we cannot ignore the fact is that at 3.2 unemployment rate, we've got to make sure we have the human factor infused into that, so that they are trained, skilled, and ready to step into jobs, good paying jobs. And typically, if I could be blunt, surely no reflection on Salt Lake, but we have a hard time getting Salt Lake graduates out of the university up there to come north. They have a pretty good home here in the Salt Lake Valley, and if not, they surely will go to Utah Valley. To me, Weber State University needs to be given the position to start generating the engineers that we need to be able to feed that requirement. We need our tech colleges to talk about the composites and the sheet metal elements associated with that industry. We need to make sure there are levels of higher education to include our STEM. And I think I heard somebody from Davis County that the STEM programs are actually helping at the elementary and other schools that are feeding that workforce, so that we can tap into it to be able to sustain this industry, whatever that industry may be. So as long as, if I can be blunt, as long as we make sure that whatever we see the overarching goals of economic development taking place in our different regions also includes the development of workforce, then I think we can close that gap. We can close that and make it work, because I can help and say that, yeah, I can put a structure in Roy that'll basically allow people to live in Roy and get on a train walking distance and travel all the way to Salt Lake to be able to go to work. I'm okay with that. But if I'm going to bed down some type of aerospace industry up north, then I've got to make sure we've got the human resources to sustain that. And that, I think, is an interesting challenge that I think maybe should be considered if it's not already.
It certainly is. I mean, Boeing's pushing back a little bit on the state with their expanded role and wondering where are the workers, right? And I don't want to take any thunder from Kerry. Do you have anything to add to that? I don't.
I feel like there are a lot of connection points between economic development and workforce development. I see our agency coupling with others around the table like the chamber to find those pinch points. We work with the tech colleges. We're part of the Talent Ready Utah push, where there's all kinds of opportunity for industry to couple with education, come and ask for grant money to develop some sort of pipeline shoring up activity, whether it's marketing to students or developing a new career path, expanding. Engineering is one. I believe Weber State got a couple of different grants in the Talent Ready Utah history for developing. So those things are, I think they are at the table. But we should continue to probably communicate that and make sure that all the right people are at the table so it really is pointed, directed, it's efficient as possible. Those are my experiences.
So that
this is Bruce Davis. I'm from Weber State, and I agree with what's been said about the need for Weber State and the tech colleges to up their game in terms of supporting Hill Air Force Base and other aerospace entities in northern Utah. Weber is making strides there, I think, particularly in the software engineering area. I just added mechanical engineering to the set of degrees that are offered. We need to do better. We're working on that, and of course we could use help in doing that. We've been getting some help from a strategic workforce initiative and other sources of funding, but this is an ongoing issue, and it takes a while. Once we get a student in the pipeline, it takes a couple, 3 years, 4 years to get them through the program and ready for employment in the workforce, particularly in the aerospace industry.
So what I was going to say is that workforce piece would be likely one of our overarching goals, our five-year goals within our sets. So it was before, and that's things like retain and expand businesses that pay high wages. And we could have workforce alignment within each county, because that need for alignment is different per county or per region. And that's where the data that Zions is going to help us flesh out is going to be so critical, because they'll highlight some of those unique data components for each of the counties, and then we can write strategies to work on as a collective group over the next 5 years to address those. So that's perfect, and I'll keep that top of mind as we're looking at the SEDS strategies. But I think that's where that nests, at least into this discussion of goals overall for the WFEDD.
Jim.
I'm sorry, can I cut in front of somebody?
It's all right, go ahead.
It really highlights to me, though, the web of the intricate web that is economic development. Because now we're talking about education, and it's critical, really is. But if we talk about education and forget to talk about housing affordability, then those guys still won't work here. And if we don't have a good ETA system that will transport them where they need to be, that doesn't help. The biggest challenge, I think, for our group is to keep that balance as we move forward. If we only move one or two things and forget one, that one's going to kill us. And it may be something like, have we really thought about water? You know, water's going to become a limiting factor for too long. Have we thought about high-speed internet, and all that? That needs to become it needs to become just a standard, just like power and gas and sewer. It needs to go into every business side. So there's just a lot. You know, I really appreciate what you're talking about. But I hope we all realize it's one of about 10 factors that need to be on our radar. So anyways, sorry.
Well, Abby had a really great visual as part of her slide deck last week in that training with UAC about the proverbial three-legged stool and how with some of our tax policies and unintended consequences, we've already kind of shortened some of those legs and how we need to be mindful of that balance. So really good point. Jeff?
Well, from my perspective, it's great to see this happen. I think we were, in my previous life, we were the lone voice in the wilderness talking about this for a long time to say, you can work on all these things, but if you don't have jobs to go with them, and where should the jobs be, and all those kinds of questions, and it's great to see this moving forward. My question is, who does this? Who is the entity that actually is going to implement this item number 4 on this chart. Is it assumed that this flows out to all the local entities, that they just do this as part of the doctrine set forth by the SEDS, or is this, is there an actual entity that's actually going to take this on and do that besides them?
That's a really good segue, because what this is, and I just want to show you and sort of test drive the visual of what the vision is, and that might help answer that question, and then I'll answer it a little bit further in what I think the answer is to that. So this is the collective, all the layers on the map, and we're going to run through them separately, but the question of our vision and of the regional transportation plan is really where growth occurs matters. The where question matters as much as what. So it's not just that we locate a few hundred jobs in X county, it's that we locate them in the correct spot that has the infrastructure to support it and the housing to support it. And not to give you too many anecdotes, but I was at National League of Cities conference in LA and got to witness firsthand both the power of the LA port. Over 40% of all containerized goods come into the United States through that port, and the horrendous mismatch that they have between 15,000 jobs that are workforce jobs and the housing, because you've got San Pedro right next to the port, which is some of the least attainable housing, and that's 100 years of collective land use and transportation decisions that have now culminated in huge manufacturing, huge port, huge job opportunities, and people with 2 to 2.5 hour commutes through traffic coming from all sorts of directions. You know, they don't have the same linear approach that we do.
So let's not do that. That's what you're saying.
The answer is we're not going to do that. So where growth occurs matters. So just to run through these pretty quickly at a high level. First, over 3 years, we've asked all of the local communities for their locally and identified centers and districts that are of regional importance. So this isn't a zoning map. This is not even really a wish list of land use items. This is areas in a local government that they would identify as these particular land uses into the future. Ted?
Quick note, yeah. We're just showing Sullivan County to illustrate the layers, and the vision actually extends from Brigham City all the way through Utah County, including Morgan and Tooele counties.
Sorry, yeah.
And more.
Yeah. I pulled this out of an existing slide deck this morning as we discussed, so sorry. But this has our metropolitan center, urban centers, town centers, neighborhood centers. We have definitions for all of these things. The locals have identified them. And then it goes down further, drills further to identify employment districts, industrial areas, special districts, which are things like universities, airports, other public goods, and then residential protected, being mostly green space, mountains, hillsides, and then we have military.
And again, projecting forward for future development.
Right.
Okay.
So if you are, this is the power of this, is if you're the economic development director for a city, you and your city planner, your public works director should really get together and discuss the key opportunities in these areas, because they were then overlaid with first our regional roadway, well these aren't really in order, but first you're seeing is our regional roadway network of freeway, highway, and major local roads. Next would be our transit improvements and how those look at and are adjacent to and touch these centers and support these centers. Active transportation networks, including both routes that we would consider commuter routes for cyclists, as well as recreation and how those interface with the areas. And you put it all together and you have an integrated transportation and land use plan. So this is at a much deeper, much more detailed level, really zoomed down to neighborhood level on these shapes, these land use shapes, and refined locally to have these conversations about where would you, as a mayor or a city manager, be willing to have a conversation in your general plan to change land use to make this happen. And this is reaching out to, this is looking out to 2050 for the land use. So it's longer than anybody's general plan for land use. And it's our full-length term 2050 for our transportation improvements that have been phased and fiscally constrained. So this is a really, I mean, it's cliche, it's a roadmap, literally, for how we could develop in the future in these centered areas, and much more well-defined than our Wasatch Choice 2040 map, which is hanging up on the wall over here.
But Scott, you're talking about the, you've made several references on the municipal side, like if you're a city,
yeah,
or a county, And what land use you're playing, but also on the private sector side, this kind of goes back to Jeff's point, yeah. Jeff's question, who does this? Well, in a way, everybody does it, because if you're a private business, if you're EDCU and you're trying to promote economic development, the location of that economic development can and should be coordinated with anticipated land use and infrastructure investment. So both sides coming together, and then I think you're probably going to get to this, of course, in the last proposed goal, gets at how to factor these things into the decision-making processes for each entity or each sector. They need to be talking from, but then both incorporating transportation needs to think about the economic development side, and the economic development folks need to be thinking about the transportation side, et cetera.
Right. And then, if I may, layer deeper, from my perspective, we need to look at how incentives that align to where that land use actually lines up, both on the state and the local side, to make sure we're not out of whack on our incentives. So there's policy decisions that then come after these things are starting to be made about how we incentivize. It's not a one-size-fits-all incentive to go anywhere you want to, but you're strategically aligning them where it best fits the overall growth patterns.
Well, and I think these opportunity zones are now really playing into this as well, and as an impact incentives are necessary, and here is where the connection goes forward.
The opportunity zones as authorized under the federal tax law and now as designated by the governor, right? Okay.
But I'll go back to my question. Is this the job of the district to be the keeper of this and to be the evangelist to go out and do all of this? Is that the job? Is it Wasatch Front Regional Council? Who's going to do this?
It's our
other than having virtue spread among county commission meetings across the state and hoping that a commissioner will be enlightened enough to do it.
Or is still in office.
And I mean, it's
still hold on, in office. Hold on one second. Jeff, answer your own question, please.
Is it the district?
Who do you think it should be?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's
why you're stepping here. I apologize.
Because I want to bait you as well, Jeff.
So. Yeah. What do you think?
So the owner of the SEDS is the district. And so if the SEDS is going to happen, if the SEDS all points to this, then that means that the district has to do it. But I guess I'm just wondering, does the district have the structure and the horsepower to actually pull this off, to make that happen amongst this very, the mayor's made a great point to say, we're all playing well in the sandbox together today, but what's going to happen by 2050? Who's going to be the continuity that really does all that?
So, Jim, I think I heard you kind of answer it in your way. What did you say?
No, I was just checking with her to see if I was right.
Okay, so what did she tell you?
Because I was sitting there thinking the driver is Wasatch Front Regional Council, and then that's when it clicked what you were saying. It is the Economic Development District, technically, but it still runs through our Wasatch Front Regional Council Association, which by design is supposed to be broad enough to bring in every private sector, public sector, every county, every city, and all that. And honestly, if I could throw one more compliment at Wasatch Front Regional Council, you're probably getting tired of it now, but I've seen so many of these through my life that there's a, let's do a five-year plan, and about the third year of that five-year plan, it just poops out, you know? You guys have kept the momentum going. And it was interesting, as I was listening to you, well, it was 3 years ago we did this, and it was 5 years ago we did this. You have been able, in the Wasatch Front Regional Council, to maintain that momentum through turnover in cities, turnover in counties, and I think it's important that this organization stay in the lead on this, because I'm going to be gone, some others are going to be gone, some new people will come in. You're going to have to re-educate, but there needs to be constancy, and I think Wasatch Front Regional Council is that constancy.
Before I go over to Abby, because she's about to be alluded to here, I think a lot of that has to do with who you've chosen to be, you know, responsible with the overall vision of this group too. Now, that sounds a little bit like a pat on the back, but it's not as much as I'm intending to pat Carlton Christensen on the back, because he had a perspective bigger than just the county he was working for. And I think we'll all need to be mindful of that with whoever we choose to be the successor when my term is done here in the not too distant future as well, because sometimes it can be very, very tempting with economic development to just look at what's inside your area. I've seen that on a personal level when a jurisdiction is so hungry for anything that they abandon what we all might determine here regionally would be what we're good at to just take anything, right? Because politicians love to say, we've created jobs. But we don't really stop and ask, well, what kind of jobs were those? It's just about a job count. Exactly. And whether or not it was suited for it, did we have the housing mix to go with it, like was alluded to at the port? Do we have the transportation corridor? Or are we just creating the housing and some jobs, you know, in the southwest quadrant of Salt Lake County? And then how you get those workers there off of the I-15 spine before the, not Mid-Valley, the Mountain View corridor was in, you know. And it's always that mix, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do you get the jobs and then you hope that the infrastructure will follow, or do you get the infrastructure there, like China seems to be really excellent at, and then you hope that the population follows? You know, you put your neck out in the capital market with all of that investment first, and then hope that you can recoup your costs. So there's an illusion that I'm making about, you know, who might be good to look at a regional perspective in addition to the EDD. And then this is just my two cents, and I'm gonna turn it over to Abby. She had her hand up. I think to answer your question, Jeff, it's a little bit like our founding fathers expected with the division of an executive and legislative branch. There's always this healthy push-pull. There's this never one is wholly responsible for it, because we around the table and our missing partners that couldn't be here today, we make up the EDD. So while staff may be the directive for the execution of it, think of us like the legislative branch that gets it for each part of our play in this district, and it's up to us. And if any given time our community changes its decision on what we want for economic development to look like in our area, then, you know, as awkward as that may be for staff and consistency's sake, like Jim is saying, they may have to adapt to an area of the district saying, you know, time out, it's been 10 years, we want to change that. But I don't think it's going to be as streamlined as just one party is responsible for deciding it and the execution of it. But that's just my opinion, which I think is probably as different as everybody else around the table. Abby?
I would just add that in the next iteration of 136, that hasn't been totally fleshed out. There's been the bone structure to SB 136, requiring economic development be part of the transportation planning. This will give some guidance in my mind about how it's laid out. It'll give some guidance to the other MPOs too, as well, to actually do the alignment between that linkage of number four between transportation, land use, and economic development. It will write the code, so to speak, for the next iteration of 136. So there's really the next policy is going to be drafted based on how successful we are putting this together. And then the one thing, a comment I'm going to make, and just everyone needs to be aware of this, there is a movement out there of an anti-growth sentiment out there. There's people coalescing together, groups coalescing together about just close the mouth, like shut the walls, we don't need any more. We have to be very mindful of that and how we actually maneuver in and around that, because if we do it poorly, if we plan poorly, that voice will get louder and louder. But if we continue to be mindful and smart and attack it from a data perspective and a planning perspective, we can supplant those voices really easily. I mean, we can really, really temper those voices, but it is becoming, it's rampant, and they're starting to come together.
I will give an anecdotal testimony for that. In Tooele County, in Tooele Valley specifically, we've had a number of either development agreements or rezone requests come before the county commission as of late. And you may know, like with the Cottonwood Mall redevelopment element or with the Hills, that there's a referendum opportunity that you have 45 days to gather enough signatures to overturn such a decision. And we have five of those that are currently in that 45-day window for referendum right now. And I've come to appreciate that what looks like high density is subjective, because you've got some folks in unincorporated parts of Tooele County right now that are looking at third-acre lots as high density. which to me blows my mind because I grew up in an urbanized area outside of the state. And I'm sure that Randy and Rochelle and Mayor Wynn, those from Tooele County, can attest that they have coalesced. Those groups are now working together on all of those five and two more expected after tomorrow night's commission meeting, because it could be suggested, I'm open to constructive criticism, but we probably have not handled that well. Some of it is speed at which a developer wants to move and a general sense of the public wanting to slow things down, especially if they feel like, well, there's just so much that goes into it, right? But this is personal to me, and I kind of got just a tad bit emotional about it when several back-to-back sessions of our UAC conference last week spoke about this. I was raised by a single mom. We moved around a lot, and we were one of those people that it just grates on my nerve, and it makes me feel bad for my own populace who does not realize how they're coming across publicly when they say those people. Those people bring in crime. Those people, you know, deteriorate an area. You know, that just bugs me. My mom was not one of those people. And I'm not one of those people today because I choose to still remain on my 6,000 square foot lot starter home because I've chosen a different modality of, you know, mortgage payment or be debt free kind of thing. But it does not mean everybody that lives on a 5-acre ranchette raises kids with a strong work ethic because they've been raised around livestock. It does not mean that everybody that lives in a townhome is, you know, increasing crime in an area. And so to Abby's point, and this is my anecdotal element, I'm a big fan of Spencer Cox. That guy has a huge heart and is still, I believe, a good policymaker. And it hasn't mattered whether it's about the LGBTQ community, immigration, you know, internationally, you know, coming into our country. We have got to remember we've got a heart. But I don't see a lot of Native Americans around this table today. We are all a land and the creation of immigration policy. And it doesn't matter whether it's immigrating from Salt Lake County to Tooele County or Arizona to Utah, but there's got to be a better way that we can sell this message that this is about people's children and grandchildren, because we've culturally been very good at what many of us subscribe to theologically, and we have large families. And I don't know how we fix it, but we've got to fix it somehow, and we've got to address this cohesion between all of these efforts. Tina?
Well, I think we have to acknowledge and we have to add at this point. It's not, as long as in the 4 years I've served on different committees at Wasatch and Regional, when I've had to be the alternate for other committees, I'm surprised at the number of non-elected officials who serve on these committees who have been elected officials, and every single one of them will take the opportunity to share with me the story of what growth project got them voted out of their elected position. It is the reality that if you're on the cutting edge, you're going to take fire. That's just exactly how it goes. And if you're willing to be forward-thinking, especially in the community who wants to, not in my backyard, every project that comes in or anything that's going to be different, you're going to take heed for that. That's the reality of these positions, especially elected positions. But it goes back to what we've been saying now since July. At some point, we have to have a narrative to push back, and we have to coalesce as a group as well. If you're going to be on the cutting edge, we also have to have a narrative to push back and give an alternative to the not in my backyard, and give an alternative for what it's going to look like if you don't plan. I think that's worse than when. But the reality is, if you don't address it, you get voted out. And then you're looking at starting over, changing direction. So I do think it's time to address it.
I'm new to this world, so. But I will tell you, though, what I have seen is that if we do our job well and we plan for where these jobs are going and there is good transportation options around them, you get a lot less of that back in my backyard. People go, you know, you look at some of the projects that were really controversial, like Olympia Hills, there wasn't the infrastructure there to really support what they were trying to do, 30,000 people that are, I mean, so if we do our job better and we do it well and make sure that there are that infrastructure in place and the transportation options in place, then people have a lot less pushback and a lot less problems with it. So I think it's
really important to have both.
Can I ask a question? Do you think that Sandy City has those elements in place right now with the development that's going on?
I think absolutely with Cairns, we do. Our Cairns downtown district, because you have access to tracks, because you have quick access to I-15, I can tell you, we just put in a low-income apartment complex, and we've barely heard a word from the people around it because they weren't concerned about the traffic. Now, when a 500-unit apartment building goes up on Highland and 94th South, and there's one small intersection there and no through street, we are hearing about that on a daily basis, and that's only 30% occupied at this point. So it really is, once we have that in place, the people, I think, have a lot less issues with those developments.
So I asked that question, and it's a bit loaded, and it was a bit of a trap. My extended family lives in Sandy, and without exception, every single family member that does told me they voted out Dolan because of the high density. So while I agree with what Evelyn just said, because I think we're in an echo chamber, and we know that, you know, they're right along the I-15 corridor with the Cairns project, they've got access to light rail. I agree fully with what she just said, but my own family disagrees with me. They don't think they have the right infrastructure.
It's number four. It's the linkage to make sure you have the transportation and the land use and the economic development. It's also how you communicate about it.
Bingo. So I want to get us back on track. Yes. I think this has been a really robust conversation. But with that said, if we look at the SEDS as a business plan, every successful business plan has a marketing plan within it. And I think what all too often in government we address properly is these really great plans that we then put on a shelf. And we might execute parts of them, to what Jim and Jeff were saying, is we might execute for a short period and then we kind of lose steam. We never, it's my opinion, that we are not great at the marketing part of it. We are not great about the sales pitch part of it. We talk and we think that we've sales pitched it because we're adequately informed of it. That's what we live. But how we get out in front of the consumer of our message, the average citizen, I don't think we're all that great at. And that's not intended to be, you know, a blow at anybody. I just think it's kind of a universal thing. Taxpayers recoil at the thought of using their tax dollars to pitch themselves. I mean, that's why we're not even allowed to use taxpayer dollars to lobby, you know, state legislators, because it's kind of something that makes us recoil culturally. But I think that it's one of the things that hurts us, whether it's about Mayor Dolan, in my own extended family, anecdotally speaking, or whether it's, you know, collectively, we could come up with something incredibly comprehensive, bring all of these SB 136 elements to bear within the update of the SEDS, and then not necessarily educate the public that we're trying to serve through this comprehensive plan, and they don't know what we know, which is to help make their lives better and decrease those transportation times, increase the air quality, and all those components that come together in something this monumental. Sir?
I was just going to say, and obviously, I don't have the answers to all this, to a lot of these issues, but just more so questions in this case. So, you know, agree the need for very comprehensive and smart and directed marketing plans is important, but also, I mean, to the very real questions that you raised, a lot of these developments are coming up. They're not necessarily sticking to these principles that we're talking about here, right? And so when people are getting upset about a lot of this stuff, it is because it is legitimately creating some type of functional issue, which is also an issue beyond just the marketing part of it or the communication part of it, right? So some type of unified design principles or master planning or something where, you know, and obviously each developer won't be able to share the cost, or, you know, to cover the cost for all this kind of stuff, but whether it's in coordination with, you know, with the local government or whatever have you, is kind of sharing some of those costs to make sure that these design principles are kept and are affordable for whatever that developer is within that area, I think is a large part of it that would have to go along with comprehensive marketing strategy, right?
Yeah, Andrew, go ahead.
This is great. This kind of dialogue and feedback is really what we were hoping for. And what I feel like we're hearing here on goal number two, promote Wasatch Choice 2050 as an economic development strategy. First of all, I think, Scott, right, our intention coming out of this, these are high-level goals. We will take this feedback, modify
the goals as necessary, and then put meat to actions coming through each of them. Okay, so we're taking notes, and we can flesh this out as so that it is a work plan for the next year. One of the things that I'm hearing on goal number two, that one is about, in part, it's about communications. And I also hear a lot of you saying something that to me boils down to promote Wasatch Choice 2050 as an economic development strategy, but not just as an economic development strategy, but as a quality of life strategy also.
And growth.
Growth, quality of life, all of that, right? Now, this is the EDD, it's focused on economic development, but it touches across all of these areas. So I feel like there's some massaging to be done, perhaps to broaden that for the communications, and then within that, some of the work that we do with our partners on our Transportation and Land Use Connection Program, the TLC program, Roy City, for example, and other areas around the community, helping with design principles, helping communities to work out the details of this at a local level. But so part two is all about the principles and the communications. Part three then goes back to, I think, what Jeff was asking for, who does what? And I think perhaps, if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, maybe we can ask Scott to go into goal number three, because that gets more specifically at what are the policies are we implementing, and who's implementing them to advance this? And there may be things that are missing. I mean, Abby mentioned incentives and tax policy, and so we may need to fill that stuff out and say who's doing what. And it may not all fall under the EDD, but we can at least acknowledge that there are other players that are involved in different aspects of this. But if it's okay with you, can we move on to the third goal?
Okay. So this one, integrate state, regional, and local transportation decisions with economic development efforts. And that is really fluffy and high level, and it gets to two points. It's two directions of this question. The first, and these aren't particularly in order, but one is incorporating economic development into state, regional, and local transportation planning and funding. So when we, as a transportation agency, go to program our roughly $50 million per year, what are we thinking of as an agency that's related to economic development and how we program those funds and prioritize our limited transportation resources? So that's our single piece, but that could also be at state through SB 136, local through integration of capital investment plans and having your local economic development person look at that CIP for the most beneficial projects that are going to benefit economic development. So that's one piece. And then the other piece is incorporating growth patterns and transportation infrastructure into economic development decisions. So this is the economic development director sitting in his office, in their office at the city, county, state, and thinking about, if we were to land X business, what transportation resources would be needed? What infrastructure resources would be needed in order to have that land effectively? Is it integrated with housing? Is it integrated with local land use? Is it going to cause fewer ripples in the community because it's integrated, like you have that Heron's district? That's a perfect example. As opposed to something that just feels wrong. We located a bunch of business, bunch of jobs, but it's out where now we're having to scramble to drive a transportation decision to that location. So this is a lot of words, and it could be you could add a number of components to this, but with these goals, one of the things that I try to be mindful about is what the makeup of the EDD is, what Wasatch Front Regional Council does inherently in our own work, and then how we can move the needle on those particular pieces of economic development. Because the EDD is a collection, a collective of a number of different resources and interests and people, but we don't develop workforce service planning here at Wasatch Regional Council or even the EDD. We don't create SURE sites. We don't identify individual local community needs. But what we can do is be a really effective collaborator and partner to bring economic development folks and transportation planning folks together to have a conversation that, in my decade of being a planner and a transportation planner, I've watched that mismatch happen more than it's happening together. Knowing that I've been a planning director for a local city, for Clearfield City, and that the efforts that I was thinking about for transportation planning and the efforts that my economic development director were thinking about for bringing jobs in were not
even necessarily on the same plane, let alone one-to-one. And we could make better decisions with our limited transportation resources and better decisions around land use if they were to think about these two things outside of their silo. And that comes to how we promote this, how we all collectively do our work and think about our decisions. So the answer is everyone has to take, you need to see yourself in the goals and feel that that's relevant in your work, and then be thinking about these things and how you change or implement decisions locally. And if you don't see yourself in these goals and that this isn't, you know, important to the work that you do, then we need to change the goals. Or the goals need to be broadened and have that piece for them to be effective. Because I want everyone here to walk away from meetings feeling like the work that they're doing in their office is going to benefit, you know, that work specifically, but then also move the region forward in economic development in a collective way.
All right. We've had a great discussion, and I don't want to beat a dead dog, but at the same time, if...
Yeah,
we did dead dog. No, I've heard dog and horse, my bad. Maybe it's just a Tooele County thing. We do have a saloon called Dead Dog Saloon for a very specific reason. Anyway, happy to tell you the anecdotal story behind that some other time.
Thank you.
Is there... Are these the right goals? This is ultimately the question that's before us. Are these the right goals? Do you have anything to add or contribute to maybe modify them? Or is there a fourth goal? We don't want to make these so unwieldy that it becomes a laundry list, but at the same time, we want to make them doable enough that they're not just lofty words on a piece of paper and a website that don't really produce, as Jeff said, an execution of something. But not all at once. I don't want you to chime in all at once. Okay. Yes.
Sorry. Okay, so Liesl Lindberg with Salt Lake City. Just thinking about, like, goal number three. So with Salt Lake, as many of you know, like, the west side of the city developed as a very, like, industrial, like, heavy manufacturing area. There wasn't infrastructure to support it, and so it's booming, and that's wonderful that we're able to bring in businesses, but then we have an issue with access to workforce, just like most of the cities, and, you know, sorry, I can't speak English today, municipalities, but something that we're trying to overcome now is how to get people to work. So I'm just wondering, like, how are you planning to, like, integrate UDOT or UTA especially into this? Because we've gone to them, we've talked to them about, you know, developing the west side, having more bus routes. We have a lot of people that come into the city every day from West Valley, just because of proximity, and also from Magna. But, like, I'm just wondering how, like what their role in this is going to be, and how, as, like, cities or as a county, we can come together and make sure that our cities are even connected so that workforce can pass through, so that you don't have to just go to people in your area to get access to workforce, but how can we have that rotational exchange for healthier communities? You know, so, like, what's, how do you bring UTA?
Very relevant.
That?
I mean, at the swearing in of the two UTA trustees out of the three, because Utah County and Tooele County have an issue right now. Just have to put that in there. Luz, I'm going to say her last name incorrect.
Escamilla.
She brought that very thing up. You know, she's like, you know, here within my district, I've got a willing workforce that wants to get to the jobs, but they're the ones that have the affordable housing, livable wage kind of conundrum. And a really great friend of mine, Chris Sloan, who would be here today, you know, he's often quoted as saying, as a realtor, people live where they can afford to commute from to work. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So your point, Lisa, is a very good one, and I think it's germane to the conversation now. Wasatch Front Regional Council, as the convener of this transportation element, should be convening those multiple parties and perspectives from UTA and UDOT together to address it. But it's well noted. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Jeff?
But the voice of the says, to the answer to your question, I think should be to say, let's create jobs off the core. Why aren't we putting jobs in West Valley so that those folks don't have to commute out? I mean, some of you remember, like, Andrew and I are old enough to remember the infamous infamous West Bench Master Plan that Salt Lake County put together that had great thinking about where those nodes should be. Where should the jobs actually be distributed in that big plan mass that's out there along the way? Of course, that all has disappeared, and we're back to facing this question that you're just asking. And you're saying, how come that didn't happen? How come there's not jobs being out there? So, to goal number three, shouldn't that be the job? If we're the guys that own that, shouldn't that be something that we're saying to those folks, so that as you look forward to where should jobs be created? Yes. Where do they go? How do we create incentives and the recruiting guys out there to know where to put that so this all fits together?
Yeah. Lisa, did we
talk about it for a long time?
Well, and that's an interesting point too, because we've seen this before, especially in the Midwest, where if people are working in the same town that they're living in and you know, they have major manufacturing or something that goes under, then they still struggle because they have to move out of their town for work. And so what I'm talking about is creating like various transportation corridors where that doesn't happen. So you're diversifying where your workforce is coming from so that they don't, like, you don't have an entire tax base that falls apart just in case, you know, we enter a recession or something like that happens. So you have, you know, Hill Air Force Base, which is drawing a lot of people from Salt Lake, which is excellent. We love that. The University of Utah puts out a lot of wonderful students. But we want to make sure that it's cyclical. So you can have people in West Valley, they're spending money in West Valley, but they're earning it in Salt Lake City, or they're, you know, going up north or going down south. But I'm just saying, like, there has to be a way for us to connect the cities so that we're not all totally isolated, because that's the only way really that you protect yourself against any sort of, like,
that's the reality of how it happens. But why not put some proactive economic planning around that to say, let's create a diverse economy in West Valley or wherever that should be out there, so that you don't have those cyclical things, but yet you also try to offset some of those other things that are already happening naturally. Why not build some incentives and things to try to move that needle somewhere, at least somewhere?
This is a question.
Just highlight that the map that Scott and Sean pulled up earlier was, it gives us at least our first step into this conversation, because it identifies these key areas, these key nodes, these key centers that it's almost like our jumping off point as an economic development district to say, if we want to make an investment in based on land use development decisions, then we're going to start here in these areas, which is why I think, right, that was presented. So I think some reaction on this committee, this board's feedback, your feedback on those sites would be really, really helpful. Are those the right places? Do we need to expand or reduce some of those areas?
Well, you identified, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, what I have is more of a question. So, you know, for the last 2.5 weeks, I've been touring LA and San Francisco, like meeting with a lot of different tech companies there. And I know a lot of them have projects in different areas. So like Waymo, you have in Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz in particular, they're building out these whole mobility projects, and they're partnering with a lot of cities, municipalities to kind of create this last mile and or other type of interconnections. And they are more than willing to pay for a lot of this infrastructure to demo a lot of this technology. So, you know, I know they would have interest in this region, for a fact, and I know the individuals who are decision makers there. So have we ever thought about anything like that here? Are there any barriers to it, or what?
To asking the businesses to contribute a portion of the cost of the infrastructure or the transportation connections.
Mm-hmm. You know what Facebook's doing out in Eagle Mountain? Facebook pays for a lot of the infrastructure.
If they're new, that answer is a more resounding yes.
However,
with some caveats. Yeah, go ahead, Abby.
In 136,
let's try to wrap this up if we can within the next couple minutes.
Do have the ability to actually, if they put it into the right zones, if local municipalities put it into the right zones, we have the ability to capture some of the increase in the property taxes to reinvest it back into the infrastructure. So it's available. Any community can do that right now.
There's that.
You just have to designate those particular areas.
There's capturing of incremental property or sales tax revenue. And there's also the possibility of private sector contributions. And I'll give you another example. At the point of the mountain, the state prison is moving, and there's been a significant effort that many of us have been involved in thinking about what is going to happen in that area. One of the elements, sort of to your point, is making sure if there's a lot of housing growth and economic growth, that area is also well served by transportation. So we're talking about the possibility of extending tracks to and through the old prison site. Well, how does that get paid for? And part of that is likely to be a public-private partnership where you're bringing in private capital. They may be, have capital part that they're willing to invest. But so you're tying the transportation and the jobs and the housing together. That's at a macro, a big picture level.
Because one of the things I had access to, so Select USA is in June this year. And so I can get some floor time there. I can even hold some private investor meetings. They can talk about some opportunities here. If we can put together the right face to put in front of them, and more than happy to kind of help give some guidance on what I know they'd be looking for to do that. And this would just be large international investors who may be interested, as well as some tech companies.
Good. There's a follow-up. Let's totally do that. Okay.
That's great. Okay. All right. Absent of any nays, it doesn't sound like we're on a wrong path. Do we all feel cohesive enough? These are the proper goals. Staff, do you feel, Scott, that you have enough direction based upon today's discussion to proceed with any kind of minor tweak?
Yep.
Right. Andrew, anything else to add before we move on?
Only that, first of all, thank you. This has been a great discussion, and I think what our charge is now is to take this feedback, flesh this out a little bit, and share this back with you. And I guess as you're thinking about this, if you have further thoughts that you want to add or questions, of course we welcome hearing those. Right, Scott?
Yes, please.
Okay. And there's our instruction on our to-do list. When you get the email, please open it up. Yes, Tina.
Sorry, I just had to check the police to see if that's on.
It's a good suggestion.
Okay.
So one of the things that, because that's been my horse that I'm beating to death, is that there has to be...
It's a dog and dog.
My dog, my horse, whatever I'm beating to death, that this education piece of it. So it's time for us to update in Morgan County our economic development plans. Now that this is where money is being focused, this is where resources are going to be focused from this committee, from UDOT, from everyone else, it would be really helpful for someone from WFRC to come out to Morgan County as we develop those economic development plans and educate those in the room who are making those decisions. This is where the money is flowing to. This is how it works on a state level. This is what we would like to see in your plans if you're looking for resources and support to come from WFRC.
Amen.
To that point, Tooele County has held some town hall meetings above and beyond what's needed from those county commission meetings. And relatively recently, Abby's been a part of it, Scott's been a part of it.
I learned which came first, the chicken.
Yeah, that's right. And the whole rationale behind it is because of that referendum kind of feel. I can tell you how willing, if you ask and work with them, so this is said to all the jurisdictional partners in here, WFRC will make themselves available. Like, they understand the need to make this succeed and to execute on if we have a plan. And not to speak on behalf of Abby either, but she and Utah, Go-Ed, they've come out because we had a whole series. One was on density and development, one was on transportation, another one was on solely economic development, another one was on water, since somebody brought up water as a limiting factor. And we did this in-depth kind of meeting format of 2 hours each night after our commuters get home, so that they could come and get some of those popular myths dispelled. So, good point. And I just want to say that WFRC and some of our partners have been more than willing to do that. All right, without further ado, let's please.
Can we get a vote or an endorsement?
Okay.
Yeah, because it actually has established the goals on the agenda.
All right, the chair would entertain a motion as to the appropriateness of the goals that have been stated relative to the discussion that's ensued.
I move that we accept these goals as stated. I find them to be comprehensive and broad enough to incorporate just about anything we would want.
Okay, there's a motion to approve those that have been suggested and spoken through today. Is there a second?
Can we add just the amendment on number two to just, communication?
And quality of life.
Quality of life, a little bit.
Yep. Okay. So, would you accept that?
That is a friendly amendment.
So there's a suggestion to amend number two is noted. There's still a motion.
I'll second the amended motion. Bruce Davis.
Thank you, sir. So it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Excellent. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, moving right along then.
Aye.
Thank you. All right, so now we have this part that I'm deeply biased in favor of, but not to color that any further. I'm going to turn some time over to Rochelle Custer, who happens to be the most excellent department head over our community development department in Tulare County, to review three potential projects for inclusion in our sets. Rochelle?
Thank you, Commissioner Milne, and it's a pleasure to be here. This is my first meeting with the Economic Development Group, and it's very exciting. So you had a great segue into what I'm asking for today. We have three SEDS applications. I'll do each one individually. The first one is under the infrastructure. We have a 900-acre site in Tooele County that is prime for economic growth. It has, do you not have that one first?
It's okay, let's just go to, talking about Lakeview, right? Did you want to talk about Lakeview? That's the one you're talking about?
Yeah, we can do Desert View State first.
There you go. Sorry.
All right, now go ahead.
Lakeview?
So, Lakeview Business Park.
Okay. I just thought I would do infrastructure, innovation, and economic planning because that's how it is.
I think I know which one.
Thanks, Michelle.
You're welcome. So, we're looking to prepare shovel ready site. We have a possible buyer, a prospective buyer for this 900 acres that would like to develop an industrial hospitality kind of region to support our racetrack. Great location, close to I-80 and the proposed Mid Valley Highway, which will be constructed in 2021. So we have the transportation infrastructure in place. However, one of the big things that we battle with in Tooele County is water and sewer. We have an improvement district that can serve this property and is within the jurisdictional boundaries to do so. However, we have about an $8 million price tag to get the water and the sewer to this location. So we would like to request that this be placed on the SEDS for $3 million, so that we can request that grant from the EDA.
And I just want to make one quick clarifying point on these. So you have the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, which has a list of projects and how those relate to the SEDS goals. So as these applications were put together, they were related to the previous six goals in the SEDS that we're currently operating under. No one is underway. So accepting these projects onto our list is not obligation of this body to fund them. It's really an endorsement that this project aligns with our regional economic goals, and then it allows the local jurisdiction to make application to EDA, our federal partners, to get that funding to come back to the local community. So this is step one in a process. It's a pretty low, this one pager, it's a pretty low bar to clear as far as an application, and then it gets harder as you make the application through EDA on commitment of funding. So I just wanted to make sure so you all don't feel like you're committing $3 million today, but just clarification of what these are.
But we would love it if you did commit today. That would be fantastic. Jeff, you had something?
Is this the land site that belongs to the Miller family?
Yes.
East of the racetrack? Is that correct? I'm sorry, I'm going to decline. Or Reckitt Benke's or warehouse or something?
Yes.
It's still, it's different, but that warehouse,
that's that building that's still there.
And as we've looked at economic development for this site, this has been one of the big things is the infrastructure. So we're trying to overcome that. We anticipate this could create up to 1,500 jobs. There are 700 jobs currently at the location with about $1 billion worth of property tax investment by the developer.
I want to just add this 2 cents too. It's by no means an obligation on the part of Tooele City or Grantsville City, but we're attending to work regionally with our partners. We still continue to have some discussions and meetings about what that regionality might be. So we're putting into practice what it is we're preaching in relation to the EDD as well. While we've already undertaken a study that has, you know, proved that to a greater or lesser degree on a linear scale, the two municipalities or that special service district, SPID, Stansbury Park Improvement District, could offer water and certain services to municipal type services to the project area. We think that for the benefit of the collective success of the valley, Tooele Valley specifically, it would behoove us to work in partnership. So this is also part of that, but we don't think that that is too terribly important at this particular level. Are there any other questions about this application?
Are we approving as we go?
I would run through all three, and then if you have a reason to separate, you can otherwise.
Thanks, Abby. That's what I was just going to bring up. Okay, Rochelle, next.
Okay. Which one's next, Rob?
It's the Deseret UAS.
Okay. Deseret UAS is a new fun company that just opened in Tooele County. This is an unmanned airspace systems, is what the UAS stands for. What we're asking for on this is, we anticipate about a $3 million project cost to get this off the ground and going well to where it can be self-sustainable. We're asking for about $500,000. We anticipate this project will create a cluster development for innovation. This can produce very high-paying jobs. We do have some educational companies, well, corporations, schools within Tooele County that can help provide the workforce needed for these high-paying jobs. So we're requesting that we be placed on the list so that we can apply for the $500,000 for the innovation grant. We anticipate at full development this could create hundreds of jobs. We currently have three. We anticipate quite a few more. And they will be the higher paying jobs in the high tech industry. With transportation becoming so expensive, the unmanned airspace systems are becoming more and more popular, and looking at providing transportation without lane miles.
Do you have any idea what the funding that $500,000 component of the EDA would be used for?
Site development.
So actual infrastructure site
and all that stuff?
Predominantly, yes. They're, depending upon some irons that are in the fire right now and seeing how they continue to flesh out, we would need some infrastructure elements.
And these are all performance-based, these first two, the infrastructure and the innovation. Through EDA, it needs to be dollars into the community results in jobs out on the other side. So there's a reporting mechanism back to EDA that you have fulfilled the requirement to provide new jobs. It is. The post-performance reporting?
No, it is not. It's, you say up front how many jobs you're expected to be able to fulfill or do as part of the application process.
So, yeah. To the point brought up earlier, we'll be fleshing this out even further than what this application for inclusion in the SEDS will be before we actually apply it to the EDA. So,
we're
if
just
this.
Voting on letting it
that's
before.
Correct. Before we commit funds and that next process, we just wanted to make sure that this body here would include them in the SEDS, then we'll go forward with the much more robust and fine-tooth comb metrics needed in order to formally apply. Any other questions about this one? All right, Rochelle, last one, please.
This one falls under the planning. As you mentioned, it's time to update economic development strategy plan. We'd like to put together a plan that affects the whole region versus just Tooele County. We anticipate the project cost for that to be about $70,000. We're asking to be placed on the list for $35,000 to apply for an EDA grant. This will help to recruit businesses, to provide more local jobs, and strategies for understanding the types of businesses that are best suited for our local area. Today, we project that 76% of our workforce travels to the Salt Lake Valley. We'd like to update our economic development plan to recruit businesses to keep those people local.
this is the only EDA funding that isn't dollars in, jobs out. It's just that one planning piece that allows local communities to create more robust and people.
Do we have others on that list right now that are planning related type?
Yeah, we have other projects. Yeah, there are other planning related.
So it's not like a total amount.
Yeah. It's one of the funding sources that we have through EDA that's eligible to be applied for. So it wouldn't be an anomaly or different. It's just who is taking it on. And in some cases, some communities have that staff or that power to do it internally. Maybe we funded it through a TLC project through another way. We've done economic threat studies, or EDCU is a great resource for local communities who are partners with them. So they do this sort of work. So it can come a number of ways.
Any questions about this application? All right, hearing none, then I'd entertain a motion if it were to include all three. Well, now slow down. Not everybody at the same time.
I've been doing all today. Somebody else do one.
I make a motion to include these three projects on to the set.
Okay, there's a motion to include the three noted projects into our SEDS. There's a second.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Carrie seconds. All those in, well, is there any further discussion?
Carrie, do we see these again in the next? I'm curious. I'm not.
Do
we see the next version of the application? Or does it just go on without this?
We have a spreadsheet that populates that's pretty simplistic, and then it gets forwarded as an EDA application. So I think it would circle back. If we were to get funded, we would report back to you that project that went on our SEDS was funded by EDA to do this particular thing. Because we want to promote that too. You know, if we get funding coming to our region, we definitely want to talk about that. But no, I don't believe that the WFEDD sees the EDA application.
Now, as a matter of curiosity, if you want to see that.
I
wouldn't have any problem sharing it with you. You know, not only just transparency sake for anybody on the board, but if there's, you know, any consideration you can give, then all right, she's not paying attention. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstain? All right, it will be noted as unanimous. Our next item is a roundtable discussion. I think we've had a pretty good one today, unless there's anything else you want to bring up to the chair or staff for consideration at our next meeting. Nope. Okie doke, then we'll move along from that as well. So the only other item of business is to note that our next meeting will be February 25th. I will say that this coincides during the legislative session. It could be a bit of a challenge for those of us that, as I look around the room, that's pretty much most of us that are actively engaged during the legislative session. It is tough with all the meetings that go on and the increasing number of bills that they try to float every year and the 500 or so that they seem to get taken care of. I'm suggesting aloud that maybe we consider moving this to either ahead of the legislative session or postponement until after, but one or the other, just because there's so much that needs to be done by so many of us as I look around the room that are actively.
Katie's our scheduling.
Okay. Then perhaps what are the thoughts about before or after? Is that a thumbs up, like to consider before or after?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm not hearing anybody say no, and I'm seeing most people say yes. So, is there a preference to before or after?
Before.
What's that?
Before.
Okay. Excellent. All right, then that's what we'll work with staff to accomplish. So, Katie will.
Yeah, and I'll get that rescheduled and send out the new invite for that. And then also, does the time that we changed it to 1:30 to 3, does that still work for everybody, or?
Two-hour meetings are aggressively long. And 1 o'clock was a hard time to start because a lot of people are at lunch and then you have to rush out of lunch to get here. So if you're okay with an abbreviated meeting, and then next year we could discuss bringing back up whether we meet 6 times a year like our other committee meetings or keep it at 4 times quarterly like Chrisom has historically been meeting. It'll depend on pacing of our agenda items and how we feel, whether we're rushing. So if you're good with it, then we'll list it at 1:30 to 3 again.
Okay, well, I think we've got good enough direction there. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, excellent. Thanks, y'all. Thanks for staying with us on the phone.